Okay, good evening. I'd like to welcome you all to the Monroe City Council Agenda regular business meeting for Tuesday, April 15th. The time right now is 7 p.m. Roll call, please.
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cuddeback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, and Gehring.
Thank you. And I understand that Councilmember Gamble will be a few minutes late. Councilmember Rasmussen, please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is a presentation from the Economic Alliance on the aerospace IPZ, and I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Troy McClelland.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor, and thanks to council members for having me. My name is Troy McClelland, and I am the president of Economic Alliance Homewood County. And I'll tell you just a little bit about what that is, and I'll make sure I leave time for questions. I'll probably speak 5 or 10 minutes and then make sure there's an opportunity for questions. In front of you, you will see what is really a multi-purpose piece that we put together. And you will see an overlay of the aerospace IPZ. The aerospace IPZ is a large yellow section that's on that map. Economic Alliance, and before I really go into the IPZ, I want to tell you what Economic Alliance of Homewood County is and why it was important that we were formed. Economic Alliance of Homewood County is a private-public collaborative. Specifically, we are funded by 70% of our funds come from private enterprise. 30% does come from the public. The county funds us, as does City of Everett and other cities do, in fact, provide some funding for us. The reason it's important to really call out and note that we're a private-public collaborative is because, really, until we existed, there wasn't a place where private enterprise felt like there was a conversation around what's necessary for them to succeed as manufacturers, as retailers, and on a regional basis. Certainly, you know, Chamber and Monroe, great Chamber, doing good work. But as a region, we have some stunning assets that other regions were really using the fact that we weren't having a regional conversation against us. And let me explain what I mean by that. In this aerospace IPZ that you see in front of you, the first thing I'd like to note is the aerospace IPZ itself, when it first came into pass, the state just sort of took a pin and decided about where an aerospace ITZ should be. And they said, well, we got Boeing out of Painfield, ITZ, the Innovation Partnership Zone. They said, we think there's enough companies that we should be worried about an aerospace ecosystem, if you will, in Homewood County. But they really didn't do any research. So Economic Alliance for Homewood County, for all intents and purposes, was hired by a bunch of aerospace companies to say, hey, we are mutually supporting one another, but we don't think we're having a conversation in the proper way with the state of Washington and our legislators to be able to make a business case for us. Can you help us with that? So the first thing we did is we went and said, okay, what designations do we have for Snohomish County? And lo and behold, we found that there was an aerospace IPZ. It was by zip code. It was this huge amalgamation of a lot of land, a lot of not industrial land, a lot of farmland. Right, there was essentially just said in these zip codes, we have the aerospace IPZ. What we did is we went and characterized where the aerospace businesses actually are and/or where they should be and can grow to, based on either industrial lands or the ability to say there's an asset. Take Monroe. Monroe is a perfect place for an aerospace company to come on a lot of different levels. You've got great transportation in and out of the city itself. You're close to Boeing, but you're not so close, right? And I will talk, and I've shown companies the city of Monroe. Most recently, an aerospace painting company was interested in the city of Monroe. They think it's maybe 3, 4, 5-year deal before they decide whether or not they even come to the Puget Sound. But they wanted to be close, but not too close, because they thought it would put too much wage pressure on them. So the second step of this was How many companies, how many are aerospace, how many are mutually supported in the supply chain? There are over 750 companies in Snohomish County that are characterizing themselves as manufacturers. That's their SIC code. There are over 270 that are advanced manufacturers. That means they have intellectual property or a process or something that puts them in this category of advanced. In the aerospace IPZ in front of you, there are about 205 to 210 aerospace companies sitting in that yellow section. And originally, Monroe was not part of the aerospace IPZ, and it should be part of the aerospace IPZ. One, you have technology companies out here, you have aerospace companies, and you have companies that should be interested in knowing what Monroe has to offer. You can also see Arlington, parts of Arlington were not in the aerospace IPZ. And so there's a number of different things we've corrected along the line. Right now, the aerospace IPZ is primarily for recruiting purposes. The state, about 5 years ago, gave Snohomish County, I think it was $200,000 initially, to set up the IPZ itself. That money was long gone before I took this job 3 years ago. And largely, it was used to really, start to primarily instruct companies that Snohomish County was on the map. You know, that we weren't Seattle, we were on the map, and we did aerospace. That money is gone, and of late, the state said, hey, do you want to maintain this aerospace IPZ? And my answer is an enthusiastic yes. When I was at the Paris Air Show last year, I walked in with this very neat map. It didn't have our transportation projects on it, right? What it did is it had our assets down below. Fifth largest port on the West Coast by export value, most productive airport in the state, Painesville. 250 companies, not in Seattle, so better wages, a better quality of place, if you will, from a downtown corridor for manufacturers, a manufacturing friendly county as well as city. This is an enormously important marketing piece for our county, and it was being underutilized, I would argue, until you really sort of had a place like Economic Alliance, Snohomish County, our lot in life is to characterize us as a region. And the way I view it is a portfolio. I don't make a decision for a company where they go. I show them the portfolio, right? I show them Arlington. Some companies are going to need to be by Painesville. Let's be honest. Boeing's going to say, I need to right there. Some companies don't need to and don't want to be by Painesville. And I should be able to produce and show for them the entire portfolio of the opportunity. And some are very much going to want to be in Monroe and Arlington and places that are prepared to have those companies. So that's the aerospace IPZ. Very, I think, important for our county's future, and I've got a lot of traction out of it when I've been out recruiting businesses. I know of late there's a conversation about a recreational IPZ of sorts. I think that idea does have some legs, but I think it has legs, again, in and around a sort of a value chain characterization of our entire region. You know, if you think about the opportunity you could find in the Port of Everett from Type Boarding all the way up to Stevens Pass, I do think there's some legs to that idea. I think we have to be mindful and consistent and thoughtful about the way we use that idea because there are strings that come attached with these IPZs, and if we were to go after money for an IPZ specifically from the state, there's also a number of reporting requirements, and they don't necessarily help you. The aerospace IPZ where we are right now is really a good place to be, which is we had an initial cash infusion, and right now it's a great marketing tool and one that we're just trying to find if there's other ways to in fact use state funding productively. That the IPZ as it relates to what I've heard to refer to as port to pack, again, I think there's something there, and I think it could be manufacturing base as it relates to a value chain all the way to an idea of marketing our region, but I think we have to be thoughtful as we go into that process. So Economic Alliance Snohomish County, we do three things. We advocate, we do business retention and recruitment, and then we do community connection. You know, me speaking here right now, I would view as one way that I'm out trying to communicate with the community and connecting and having leaders and thought leaders and decision makers understand some of the opportunities in front of us. We are not what was the old Economic Development Council. We're very, very different. the old Economic Development Council only did development, right? They literally felt their only limelight was business retention and recruitment. But that's not the way economic development works. I worked for a Fortune 500 company, and I had the chance to make siting decisions. You know, where are we going to put an expansion? Where are we going to put a company we buy? Are we going to move a company? I cared about their schools. I cared about their roads. I cared about their tax base. I cared about whether or not I could get a permit. I cared about whether or not they were being thoughtful and working with four-year universities. I cared about regulation. And I cared about, okay, now let's go find the developer. You know, the EDC used to do primarily just that last piece of it. That's not an adequate way to run an economic development organization. And when my little organization was founded, I'd say the CEOs and the people that sort of pressed this idea said, hey, I think we're missing something. You know, we're missing this idea, the resources necessary to make me function and succeed as a business. How come we always seem to be having that conversation after we've said we need to go recruit a company? Why aren't we having that conversation before? So the first thing we do is advocacy. This is an example. You know, these aren't our projects, economic alliances. This is what a study said are the 17 worst choke points in areas that are affecting negatively business. You'll see the US-2 bypass on there. So, and this, you know, we are not Everett-centric. We're not anything. We're not South-centric. We're intellectually honest. What are the 17 most important projects that relates to the economic future of our county? And you folks all know these projects, right? You know, you can see the Monroe US-2 bypass. Down at 522, you can see Paradise Lake Road Interchange. And these are things that the need accelerated aren't on the book. These are our largest choke points. And so I guess my point is, we, as it relates to advocacy, there's transportation, there's higher education, CTC, WSU, UW-Bothell, as an example. So there's talent and infrastructure that really needed some emphasis from a regional basis. Then from there, that's just one example. Then we can go do business retention and recruitment. And most importantly, it's important that we compete as a region. You know, certainly I want Monroe to compete, and Monroe should compete and do everything they can for their future, but I will also tell you, we need to compete as a region. When I first took this job, I would go down to Olympia, and they'd say, hey, Snohomish County is really easy to say no to. And I'd say, explain that to me. Because you guys come down to 20 cities. We don't know what your priorities are. How can we... It's easier, our legislators were telling me, it's easier to say yes to places like Pierce County because you come down as a bunch of disparate ideas as opposed to a regional plan. When I go down like this, I actually see this on a map. I see this map in the office of a legislator from Yakima, right? I mean, that's a lot more powerful, and we're going to get a lot further, all boats will rise if we can at least tie our ideas together regionally. And we've gotten, we as a county, not me, but we as a county, have gotten really higher marks for being able to tell that story in a distinct fashion. And if you look at some of the last language on the transportation package that wasn't passed, they literally stole it from our playbook, which what are the places that have the highest return on investment tied to jobs? And this is just one example. So this is just one example of the type of stuff we do. I've got the education piece that's similar and a bunch of other advocacy pieces. When I have a chance, I do speak about Monroe. And then when I am showing companies around, we make sure that they understand where Monroe is and what it is. And then I think you have a really important role to play, particularly as we continue to see manufacturing and other, I would say, good-making companies really look north of King County. I think that Monroe's very well positioned. And so I'd like to continue to work with you as a council and the mayor and Gene and just be a partner with you in your efforts in Monroe. And I'll be completely consistent with what you're trying to do and what you want me to be thinking about. But I think you have a bright opportunity in front of you, and I'd like to be your partner in doing that. So I hope that hit the mark, but that's a little bit about the aerospace IPZ, some initial thoughts on the other IPZ being talked about, and certainly look forward to answering your questions and being your partner up often in the future.
Thank you. So I do have one question, and then we do have council members that would like to ask some questions as well. So how are you funded?
So 70% of our funding is called, you know what, you can either call membership or investment. You know, so 70%, so about $1 million, we're $1.5 million budget roughly, 1.6. We are going to need $1.2 million this year, that's investment or membership. And so of that $1.2 million, 70% of it is private. You know, so the Boeing company gives me money. The Everett Clinic gives me money. The Everett Clinic has this view that if we were to lose aerospace and the Boeing company and manufacturing and 250 manufacturers and on and on and on, well, they don't have customers. And so it's important for them to have customers. And so they invest in me to help retain and recruit businesses and also to then make this case in Olympia that, but please put transportation funding in Snohomish County so that we get more customers. And so those are just a couple examples of my large private investors, but 70% PUDs an investor, the ports invest, cities invest, but the public side of the investment is about 30%. When I started, it was 50%, and that was, in my view, not where we should be. I felt, and so what we did is we kept the public revenue largely flat, and then I've grown the private side revenue into 3 years I've been doing this. So that's 1 point, you know, call it two-thirds, over two-thirds. And then we, I did run a business. I worked for a Fortune 500 company as a business unit manager. You want to always, I think, have manageable but multiple sources of revenue. We have two federal grants, and when I started, we had four, and two of those federal grants is what I call bad money. Dollar the federal grant gave me, I had to spend three or four to maintain or to manage that federal grant. That was not a good investment of time, and so I got rid of two federal grants and kept the two that at least I get a one-for-one return. That helps keep the lights on. You know, it helps my portfolio, and then I have one state grant. So the other, call it $400,000 to $500,000, comes from those grants, and those are necessary because there are things that we can do, there are things we do already. A lot of it is stuff we're doing already, and that helps really flatten, you know, keep my revenue in a stronger position, more of a portfolio, and then helps me manage it really as an enterprise as opposed to being completely dependent on, you know, on only investment. So.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Just a quick question about your map. I'm a map freak, so I start to ask questions. How did you decide, as far as the, I'm looking at the aerospace convergence on IPZ.
Yeah.
What's in and what's out? I know, I see, for example, the Tulalip Resort is in, and I'm just curious, is that its proximity to Everett and the fact that it generates a lot of...
No, they're actually, the Tulalip's really well wired, and so it was okay. Industrial lands and the way they were zoned,
okay.
And also the type of businesses they were there. Tulalip very specifically spent infrastructure money and highly wired and capable, and so it was in and around either... Either you had the businesses there, or you were zoned or capable of taking those types of businesses.
Gotcha. Okay. I see. And so that, like, for example, Granite Falls, you know, that's way out here over,
yeah.
Over
and
the
you
right.
Know, oddly enough, Granite Falls has machine shops and some folks that
okay.
Actually fit in the category.
Yeah.
Fit in this category and do quite well.
Yeah, curious as to why you would be in or not in. So that's great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And Granite Falls wasn't in there, and yet we found like I think it was seven or eight advanced. You know, well maybe it was only two or three, but seven or eight that were in the SIC, and then some folks that actually had more advanced technologies out there. So
very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Any other council members have any questions? So I want to thank you for coming this evening and for sharing.
Thank you.
I do want to note, I think that we had sent off an invitation to the Economic Alliance. We've got a manufacturing, what we're calling right now, a manufacturing pipeline summit.
Yes.
We haven't had a meeting before where we tried to specifically target and include manufacturers in town. And the Chamber of Commerce, you know, they certainly are organized around different businesses in town. But we were looking at a way of doing something, I guess, similar to what you've got, which is multiple entities getting together to talk about how we can help supply labor out of the Everett Community College, Monroe School District, as well as the Department of Corrections that train people, but also how we as a city can be part of that formula. So I look forward to you being there on Thursday next week.
Yep, so I'm going to, myself and some of my staff members will be there, and I might have to run a half an hour to make a meeting in Seattle, but myself and some of my staff members plan on being there, so
okay.
Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you again for coming out this evening.
Thanks for your, I'm an elected port commissioner, so thank you for your service.
Thank you for
I haven't been there and done that at city level, but I can certainly empathize, so thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item that we have on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Do we have anybody that has signed in? Okay, is there any member of the public that would like to come forward? Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
And in lieu of the subject matter of the meeting that was prior to this one, it kind of coincides. So I'm here tonight to discuss the part of the City Council meeting that occurred a few weeks ago. And this is in regard to the city's narrow-minded position on traffic and some of the choices and statements that have been made previously. We see that there are several people in this room that are not only of the feeling that choices that occur in the city has either traffic enforcement cameras or spending on police force and equipment or nothing. I'm here to ask why the city has not made a choice to make the positive and successful choice that has been made in other cities in the state and around the country. This would be what I'm referring to as choice D. This is a choice that works day in and day out for many cities. It is successful and actually saves both the city citizens and the city money. This is a choice that Woodinville has made and the city of Seattle in several spots. What is this? This is what I'm calling a high and protective fence. Why a fence? A fence provides a safe and protective option which would deter the children from coming out from behind it and discourage intruders from coming in. Some cities have even chosen to build a beautiful lower decorative concrete wall that actually enhances the looks of the area where they have been installed. By installing these fences, it would eliminate the need for cameras at all. It eliminates the majority of the waste of money for traffic enforcement for these areas also. It shows respect for those commuters and truckers who have spent their money in this community, especially for gas purchases, and expect the city to get out of their way when they are trying to get to their destinations in a timely manner. These same cameras are the ones, these same commuters are the ones who are smart enough to recognize and sometimes choose to clog up the back and side streets with traffic to deter around the cameras and the sleazy police traps. These roads are funded for and provided for the commuters, delivery trucks, and the general public. The fact that this city, and frankly any city, thinks that not providing the services that these commuters are heavily taxed for is grossly negligent and disservice to those who the roads are maintained and provided for. It's absolutely amazing that no one in this room spoke 3 weeks ago on behalf of the commuters and the taxpayers other than to supply the not so surprising fact that when asked which one a person would choose, a traffic enforcement camera or a police officer, they would choose the least of the two evils. This council rejoices in thinking that since no one said none of the above, it's a done deal. Why does the city refuse to offer an option of fences? Fences would allow the traffic to flow in a steady, faster, and consistent manner. This would deter most thoughts by most commuters to travel on the side streets, therefore adding to the life and expectancy and potentially decreasing maintenance costs for those streets. Having a steady and consistent traffic rate through the school zones would also assist the commuters in keeping their expenses to their pocketbooks down in the form of lower insurance rates due to a decrease in the moving violations. It is the responsibility of municipalities to look at all perspectives when making decisions, and I feel that the city has failed miserably in that aspect. I challenge the city to offer this choice and see how open many people would be to this possibility and choice. You might even be shocked. Then just a few weeks ago, the council discussed the possibility of putting an item on the ballot to once again allow the citizens of this community to approve another increase in sales tax. Please tell me you're not serious. The city chooses to pad the police budget with enough funds that they can even consider, let alone actually be able to afford to purchase two motorcycles, is utterly irresponsible. Spending this money in a responsible manner is what the taxpayers expect. Wasting money on motorcycles and police officers is frivolous and unjustifiable. Just a few weeks ago, there were questions regarding the funding the police staff fully. If this city is not capable of financially supporting the police, then it needs to look at other options. Installing fences is a smart, viable, and fiscally responsible choice today. And getting back to the traffic enforcement cameras, let me state for the record that there are people that refuse to come to the city and spend their money due to the cameras, even more now with the potential of unnecessarily adding to the police staff. The cameras that the city are currently using are adversely impacting commerce in the city of Monroe. And those members of council who choose to only see the public treasury are so few, perhaps you can consider the fact that many cities in this county are already making better choices. I would also like to remind the council that those companies that provide these civil cameras are now under investigation for corruption. There are also police officers that have admitted to the fact that many times these cameras are placed in locations where there have been little to no real problems. These cameras and police officers do very little other than give job security to the police, the courts, and to generate valuable income for the city through what is known as taxation through citation. Many would hold the city in a higher regard if it was willing to consider the pocketbooks, schedules, and basic necessities of those people that pay taxes to support the city. Many more may themselves decide that living in Monroe is more of a hassle than what it's worth. Please stop using the children as pawns and exaggerating about safety to embellish the coffers of the city. It is insulting to the intelligence of those who elected you. The city needs to start doing more with less money. It is a responsible thing to do. If not, please stop taking our money in the form of lower gas taxes and stop pretending that you care about the commuters and transportation of the city. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody else that would like to speak to the council? Anybody else? Okay, Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, just a point of clarification. The cameras have been off.
Yes.
And not being used since January 1st of this year.
Since December 31st, yeah.
So just wanted to make that clear.
But they're still flashing, and they still lead people to believe that there's a problem and they could potentially get sick and people are still climbing on their brakes.
Okay. So is there a date that those will be...
Chief.
Not flashing or removed, or because I've been asked the same question. Why is it?
The flashing lights have nothing to do with the cameras. The flashing lights indicate it's a school zone, and the cameras are going to be removed as soon as the company can get scheduling it to have it removed. I talked to them about a month ago on that.
Okay.
And the company, as I understand it, is interested in getting them back because they have the ability to use those in other areas. That
right.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Any other comments from citizens? Okay. Our next item on the agenda is student representative report. Our student representative is not here this evening. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Councilmember Gehring.
If there are no other lights, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Next item that we have on the agenda is under unfinished business. This is AB 14061, social media policy for council members, and this is for discussion. Mr. Feilberg, are you on this, or is... Okay. Mr. Brazel.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. We did want to bring this back to council this evening and have further discussion on it. We actually talked at the legislative committee meeting briefly this evening on this matter as well. Currently, we have a draft policy that we tailored from the Seattle example and the Cheney example. That came after looking at many options and examples throughout the state. Council liked those two particular examples, so that's what we went with. It went through review at the attorney's office, city attorney's office, and there was many concerns expressed by them in regards to what the policy was lacking. So at that point in time, we decided to shelf the matter until now so we could have further discussion. During the discovery phase of where we're at on the website, the city's website, and what we offer currently. We did some demo runs this morning and found out some interesting information about what we can do and what we can't do, and basically it pointed staff into we need to have a policy for our own staff on how we operate Facebook. There's a lot of things that can happen that we don't have control over, and we may not have the ability to pull back the data that is posted, because if a citizen posts a comment, they can delete that, and we may or may not be able to retrieve that. We haven't figured that out yet. And we also found out that things could be posted, and we don't have any control over what is posted. And so that was of concern. So I think Brad is able to pull it up this evening and kind of show council what we have and what's available.
And before you continue, I'd like the record to reflect that Councilmember Gamble came in the room at 7:30 during Mr. Brazel's presentation.
That's going to fire.
One of the city's five Facebook pages. We have the City of Monroe General page, Economic Development page, Parks and Recreation page, Police page, a Planning and Committee page. So those are the five pages, also the five Twitter accounts that we have. Things that are posted on the city's website, if you go to the government, such as these news flashes which come out of our city website also are posted on to the Facebook page and the Twitter page, so if someone's following us on that, they get those notifications too. There's also on the city's webpage the ability to have blogs. This is an example, I just set it up for the city administrator. You can blog from within our city's website. You can also allow the blogs there to have no comments, unmoderated or moderated comments. When something is posted on this blog, it also shows up on Facebook. And so this morning I posted, right there at the city council meeting tonight. It takes about 5 minutes or so to get from the city blog to Facebook, but then it shows up on Facebook. And when you click on it, it takes you to the city's blog and says the city council will be discussing the social media policy tonight. Even though the city council blog says that I posted it, and since we're not allowing comments at the moment, nobody can make a comment on that. However, we did notice today when we were looking at this is that on the Facebook page, people can make comments on our posts. People can. Facebook has, I think, three or four things. They have comments, they have posts, comments, notes, and reviews. Are the different things that are on the social media versus stuff. But you can make it so you can't post to our page or timeline, but you can't turn off the comment portion. And then Dean mentioned someone could put a comment on there. If you get shared with somebody else and then they come back and delete it, and then the records disclosure request could come in that says, where's the comment that was on the website or the Facebook page? You won't be able to produce it because it disappeared. So that's a concern that we have right now. And then also just whether or not they're inappropriate comments or not. You can have a list of words that you can filter by, but then that has to take somebody to manage that. You make a list and it sends you an email that someone's made a post or a comment with a banned word on it, and you have to go look at it and decide what to do with it. And then we also just for info there's oops, come on that. From this, there's the list of our Facebook pages and our Twitter feeds. That's all I have for the moment. If somebody wants to see something.
So at this point, I guess we're kind of looking for direction from council. We've reached out to several other cities again to see what they are offering. We had looked at specifically Mount Lake Terrace, and I actually talked with the city attorney just briefly this afternoon about it. It appears, and we haven't confirmed this, but it appears that what they've done with their council is they've let them operate their own Facebook page, but it's under their own discretion, and they monitor their own posts and that type of thing, and the city really doesn't have anything to do with it. How they're doing that liability-wise, I'm not sure, but that appears what they're doing. They may also have subscribed to a program that does screenshots periodically of the Facebook pages, but typically that's only done with the city stuff. So at any rate, they definitely have something going, but we're not exactly sure what, and the person that's in charge of that was out of the office today. So we're going to do a bit more research. Like I mentioned earlier, we need to put a policy in place for our own city staff to work on Facebook so we know how to deal with these items. We'll also be doing a few more tests when we have time to see if we can pull up posts like the test posts we put on today and if we can recover that information, because that's a critical piece for us as well.
Okay. Anything else, Brad?
No.
Okay. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. The Legislative Affairs, I met earlier just a little bit to talk about this. We can talk about that later as well. I think it was the liability issue from being able to disclose things that are asked for in the different mediums that was kind of the red flag, and I think more information was needed with regard to that. And by the way, Kevin, you're the chair of the committee, and you were here, so yeah. So enjoy that. Yeah.
Congratulations, Councilmember Hanford.
And there are certainly want to be able to have, it's important for council members to be able to interact, with the community and that kind of way. A couple of folks have their own pages, and I think the only thing that is a continuation, perhaps from when this came up, either 2 years ago or last year, was the disclosability, is making sure that we don't get dinged in some public records request, that kind of a thing. I certainly think council members should be able to have, a page. The question is, how does if you're representing yourself as a council member, either on this or on your own, what happens if someone makes a public records request, and how do we not get dinged for that? And I think that was kind of the that's kind of the one thing that's like, okay, if we can figure that out, then we'll have it all figured out. But we need to figure out the way to reduce that potential, getting dinged for something like that. When the intention's good, it's communicating with citizens. It's a good thing. How do we ensure that we're giving, and we don't find out later that something was missed, and then we're on the hook? All that kind of stuff. So, from that standpoint, are you suggesting that's more of like a third phase? So staff first and then?
Correct.
Staff first and then council afterwards?
That's what we are thinking at this point in time. We need to be able to control what we have. The one other thing, and if you want to go there, Brad, the review, we found interesting, there's a function, Brad had mentioned it, that you can review the city. And I put a nice little message on there. It said Monroe is a nice place to work. To live, work, and play. Interesting enough, once I posted that, I had no way of deleting it or changing it, nor did, and that was on my own Facebook account. We tried from the city's perspective, and we couldn't do so.
Can we try the X?
Does the X there remove it?
No.
You have to be logged in.
If you log on, mm-hmm. You log in, yep. It says, I don't like this post. That's all it says.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, weird.
The X in other programs means close it or...
Yeah.
I believe...
Make it go away.
It allowed you to report it to Facebook
and
ask them to remove it, but it didn't give us the option.
So obviously there's some concern over how the city controls what is posted. I mean, anybody could post any type of a statement there that may or may not be appropriate. In fact, somebody before us had commented that a Sonic drive-in would be great here in Monroe. And, you know, that's an okay message, but maybe it's not something that the city wants to have represented on there. And right now, it appears we have no way of controlling that, which is a bit of a concern.
So just looking at the technology then, on there, you show that there are four comments, if I can see, if my optometrist did a good job with my contacts. No. Oh, yeah, I see what you're doing. Yeah, okay. And so you can see comments that other people have posted, but you're saying that somebody could delete those comments, even though...
You can delete your own comments, but you can't delete your own review.
And so, I guess back to the public records issue, does if someone posts on this and it's an official City of Monroe Facebook page, does that make it a public record, or is it really just Facebook? Are we, you know, because then you have that, is it, I mean, if it's not really a public record, then who cares if they delete it? And that's also the issue. If is it really a public record if council members representing themselves as a council member on Facebook, if they've got their own thing? And there was a question about that as well. I think it's great that there are those pages. Don't we need to, you know, do we need to answer that question too? And I really don't want to muddy it up because I think it's a great thing. But, you know, if this isn't even a public record, then who cares if they delete it? You know, is it a public record? Is it not? Once it's, we've identified ourselves as the city on Facebook, you know, do we know that? And Liz is nodding her head yes. I don't know if that means yes or that's a question.
So, you know, one of the things we can do is we can take questions this evening and then go back as staff and talk with our attorney and see what sort of responses we come back with. That might be a good thing because we're going to be asking some questions that go beyond the technology and require additional research.
And I appreciate it.
I think those are great questions. I didn't want staff to feel on the spot just to come up with an answer when perhaps it requires additional research. Do you have anything else, Councilmember Gehring?
I don't. Thank you for recognizing me.
Councilmember Gamble, welcome.
I think the last question, Kurt, is, I mean, what I would love to, I mean, are we dissecting this too much? I mean,
right.
While we've been sitting here talking, I've been looking at the governor's Facebook page, Dan Christensen's Facebook page.
Sure.
I mean, public officials all over the place have Facebook pages. I mean, we've discussed this, you know, many times, and it seems to be figured out quite a bit on local level too. So, I guess I would ask that question.
So the question being, other agencies have Facebook pages, and the two citations you have right there are state, but there are probably local and school district and other folks that would be subject to.
Got Google. Pick a representative.
Okay, and so the question there being is, how is it that they're able to have Facebook pages, and perhaps what sort of policies or what sort of legal interpretation has occurred to warrant that?
Exactly.
Okay. Any other council members with questions or comments? Oh, Councilmember Cuddeback.
Maybe a question for the city attorney. By not having a policy and stuff is out there happening, where does that put the city at? And then second question, is it just related to council members? What about planning commissioners? And because I know there's a lot of that happening already out there, and by us not having any sort of a policy that at least outlines kind of responsibilities or, you know, where are we at, you know, what kind of risk does that put us at?
Jack?
I think that's an excellent question, and the short answer is that this is an area where the law really hasn't caught up with the technology yet. It's a consistently evolving area, and my advice to the city has always been to attempt to swim as much as possible in midstream and not be the test case on an issue like record retention as it relates to Facebook posts under the Public Records Act. The disclosability or the city's requirement to maintain for a set number of years for whatever the record retention schedule is, a review that's posted versus a comment or a post. And like Brad, I'm not a social media expert, so I'd probably use those terms incorrectly. But the existing Public Records Act, despite all of its many amendments, is a legal framework that was adopted 40 years ago, and it really hasn't caught up to an era where we have tweets and Facebook posts and a lot of other, you know, blindingly fast social media. The legal concerns about Facebook posting and social media usage generally are the ones that I believe that we discussed a year or two ago when this issue first arose, and I don't think they've really changed significantly from my perspective. Because you're public officials and that you're a governing body, there's a concern that whenever a quorum of you are posting or contributing or participating in any type of a social media conversation regarding city business, there's a potential that you might be violating the OPMA by having a meeting outside the realm of a regularly or specially scheduled meeting here at City Hall. To the extent that you're communicating about city business and putting it into a writing, you've created a public record. And that part is clear. It doesn't matter under state law what the form of a particular writing is. If you have a writing and it relates to the conduct of government, i.e. you acting in your official capacity, it is a public record and it's subject to disclosure. There are also concerns about using social media in ways that could be problematic for the city under an appearance of fairness doctrine perspective. If you have a pending quasi-judicial land use application that's going to be coming before council, you certainly don't want Facebook posts by you, someone who's going to be sitting in judgment on that project, that could be indicating some sort of bias or prejudice for or against the property, for or against the project, or any of the parties involved. And you don't want to be using that social media in a way that's going to generate ex parte contacts between you and the proponents or the opponents of the proposal. Those are just a few of the concerns. And it's a judgment call for the City Council, but I like the idea of having a policy. If nothing else, I think that that is a good reminder for council members as you use social media. Whether and to what extent it would be binding upon you and what it would encompass, those are all questions that are, you know, you're going to have to wrestle with going forward. And I absolutely agree with Councilmember Campbell in that this is an area where we really shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a constantly evolving field of the law, but other cities are doing it. Other public officials are doing it. And I think that we can cut and paste from them in a way that would hopefully, you know, lead to a finished product that the council can deal with and that would be legally compliant.
And would give council the guidance. And I think that's key to hold public officials to some sort of a standard based on best practices that are out there, because the absence of that, I think, puts us at potentially a great risk, because there is no guidance in the reality. Stuff is happening out there, whether it's school board members or planning commission or others. And I mean, we don't obviously concern ourselves with school board, but that is happening out there, and I think it helps to have a policy and to work through that.
And Zach's cut his light, so go ahead and dialogue.
And I can completely concur in that as well. From my standpoint, the largest component is really educational, and I think, as many of you know, one of the recent changes to state law this year is the requirement to actually have open government training, which will include training for all local elected officials in the area of the Open Public Meeting Act and the Public Records Act. And that, I think, would be a great opportunity to become further aware and educated on the evolving social media issues as they relate to those open government concerns. So that a policy can certainly fulfill that function as well, a continuing education of you.
Yeah. And then, Jean, I had one question. On the cover sheet, it had said that the submitted to council on 12/10/13. I don't think it was ever submitted. I think it was pulled off the agenda.
Sure.
So I don't know, you know, just to clarify that we've never really, the policy wasn't submitted in December to us to vote on. It was pulled, and the attorney had looked at it, and it was never brought to us. So
you're absolutely right.
That's it for now.
Councilmember Gamble?
Oh, I just wanted to, I made a statement earlier that I found Representative Christensen's Facebook, and it wasn't. He was just listed on someone else's. I wanted to make sure about that. But the governor does have one.
The governor does have one. Okay. So I'm hearing two things. First, I'm hearing a couple questions that that staff will work with our attorney to get responses to. I'm also hearing an interest in there being a policy. Before I have staff begin working on that, I see a consensus, head nods. So I will ask staff to answer the questions that you have and then to begin work on a policy. I do have a question for staff, maybe for Zach. Does WCIA or the AWC have any guidance or sample policies that, by chance?
To my knowledge, I'm not really certain about that, but that's okay. An excellent source of guidance, because certainly for both of those entities, particularly WCIA and its risk pool function, they're certainly going to be looking out for the risk-oriented financial interests of its client cities. And I think that to the extent that they have perceived any legal risk, their input, their guidance on that would be very valuable. But I don't know offhand whether to what extent they've done that. I know that MRSC has several sample policies, and I believe that staff have reviewed those as part of the process to date. But I don't know about the other two.
Thank you. So part of what we'll do then on the staff side is we'll take a look at WCIA, AWC. Gene had already blinked in, and then Zach got there first about the MRSC being looked at. And I don't have a definitive time, but I also don't want this to get lost. So we will put this on an extended agenda for roughly 6 weeks out to allow time for research. Does that sound appropriate to everybody? Okay. All right. So thank you very much, and let's move on to the next item. As Committee Chair Hanford returns to the dais. All right. We're now moving down to new business. The first item under new business is AB 14062, approval of resolution number 008-2014, authorizing grant application skate park improvements. And this would be Mike. So Mike not being here, who has this for presentation? Gene, perhaps?
If you've been involved, I have not. Go ahead. I'll yield.
Okay. So absent an immediate staff briefing, I do have Councilmember Gehring.
I'm going to move to approve resolution number 2008-2014 local agency wildlife and recreation program authorizing resolution for Lake Tice skate park improvements.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the topic? Councilmember Gamble.
I just had one question on it, because it's a 50-50 grant, so the 120, where's the 120, what fund is that coming out of?
I believe it's Park CIP, if I'm not mistaken.
CIP? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. The next item under new business is AB 14063, authorize the mayor to sign an interlocal agreement with Monroe Transportation Benefit District. Brad?
Earlier tonight, the Monroe Transportation Benefit District met and passed an interlocal agreement, with the city of Monroe, to outline how the funds raised by the Monroe Transportation Benefit District will be spent, and how they will, the City of Monroe will assist with staff support for that and allow the City of Monroe to use the funds raised by the Monroe Transportation Benefit District to construct transportation infrastructure preservation projects. Mm-hmm. So if there's no questions, I ask for a motion to approve the interlocal agreement.
Okay, Councilmember Hanford.
Move to authorize the mayor to sign the interlocal agreement with the Monroe Transportation Benefit District and expressly authorize further minor revisions to the extent deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next item under new business is number 3, AB 14064, setting a date for consideration of hearing examiner's recommendation for Chain Lake Estates preliminary plat planned residential development. And Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. Chain Lake Estates, which is a preliminary plat and a planned residential development, had a public hearing in front of the city's hearing examiner, who recommended approval of the project. As required by the Monroe Municipal Code, the hearing examiner's recommendation is to be presented to the city council, which is in your packet, and at that time, the city council is to make a motion to for a date to consider that project. And if you have any questions that you have to answer there, if not, I'm looking for a motion to set the date to consider the hearing examiner's recommendation.
Okay, I'm going to start with Mr. Brazel.
I just want to remind council, if this moves forward, it becomes a quasi-judicial matter, so you don't want any ex parte communication.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
I will move to set the date of April 22nd, 2014, for the closed record consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation on Chain Lake Estates preliminary plat planned residential development, PL 2013-01.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Cutterback. I have a second from Councilmember Davis. All those in any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next item on the agenda is Councilmember Reports. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I had the opportunity to attend a private screening of The Heaven Is For Real movie. It's coming out this weekend and for Easter. And it was fascinating. I highly recommend it. So, it also provided a nice date night for my wife and I.
Thank you,
Councilmember. And happy Easter to everybody this weekend.
You too. Councilmember Cutterback. Councilmember Rasmussen. Councilmember Camp.
Happy Easter.
Councilmember Davis.
I'm reporting on the 4P meeting. That's the Transportation Planning, Public Works, Parks and Recreation, and Public Safety Committee.
Say that three times.
I got it all out in one breath. Basically what we did was we went over our work plan, which we sort of formalized, and there's a copy that everybody's been given in their packet today. Some of the items that we plan on looking at and are looking at, adjusted some of them as ongoing subjects. One of the things that we did talk about that is kind of important is the street funding issue. Since we did have the other meeting earlier, and we passed those agreements, I guess is the term. We were talking about the two of the funding needs that we'll need in the street maintenance being one of them, and street capital being another. And we've been talking about maintenance, and that's what the proposed tax increase is meant to fund. Get us back up on an even plane with the maintenance needs. But looking ahead, we're going to have to be looking at street capital, because we have no fund planning or no plan for funding at this time. So it's something that we're going to have to be looking at. And those two things are separate. That 0.2% meets the one, but it doesn't meet the other. So that's something that will be coming later down the road here, no pun intended.
He stole that from me. I used that at the meeting yesterday.
There was it. Seated it in my brain.
Copyright.
We talked about the comprehensive plan up meeting that was a couple weeks ago, and we just sort of updated. I was at the meeting, it was a good turnout, a good mix of people, so I think it was a successful meeting. I think they got a lot of feedback, and that's what they're looking for, is the community to come out and give them feedback, and I'm anxious to see what the final crunch on that is, but it was a good turnout, and it was a good night, and everything went very well. Some of the new business items that we did talk about,
the mandatory garbage and recycling issue that's come up, and we're looking at two ways to go with that, franchising or a utility, and that's something that will also be coming. We'll be making recommendations to the council on. We talked about the removal of pedestrian bulbs at Frank Wagner, and we recommended that our recommendation was that those be removed, but we'll be talking, or city will be talking to the school district just to verify that that's
the removal of what?
The bulbs on in front of Frank Wagner.
Oh, the, okay.
The traffic
right.
Tranquilizing.
Sorry.
Things. Yeah. And they'll be checking with the school district again just to verify that that's okay to remove those. And we also talked about sending a draft letter to our legislators. We have a draft letter, but on the recommendation of the mayor to add a few additional dates that would include actual council meetings, not just the committee meetings, so that they would have a few more choices if they were restricted in time. They might prefer to come to a council meeting and address the entire council. So anyways, that will be finalized and then sent out to the legislators. And that was about it. So
thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions for the committee? Okay, seeing none. Councilmember Gamble. Thank you, Councilmember Davis.
All right.
Yeah.
Parks are in. Well, it's too bad Mike's not here. I would like to give an update on the condition of the fields that are out there. Full use. Wonderful thing to see. Baseball's upon us. Picture day. The entire Sky River Park today was completely just packed. And it the park system. I mean, it just looked. It looked fantastic. And there was a high school game going on at Miracle League Field, and every parking spot was taken. So it looked fantastic. The fields have been fantastic. We've had some good weather, so that's been good too. But even when we did get the rain, they've been in great shape. So they've been doing a great job there. And some good baseball being played. Come on out any day of the week down there. And then just upcoming, I do have a couple out of town business trips coming up that I know the next week I will not be able to be here, and then quite possibly May 6th I'm trying to work it so that I can go to Denver on the latter part of the week as opposed to the beginning. But I wanted to make sure and touch on those two because we don't have a meeting in between. Yeah. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. A couple things. First of all, legislative affairs, and some congratulations to Kevin for being the chair of the legislative affairs committee. We already had already said that. We talked a little bit about social media, which we already talked tonight, and he's in support of getting something in place. The guidelines is a great thing, and we certainly need that to happen. The only other thing that was kind of an overlap with your guys' committee was the getting the legislators, and so looking for a way to have Elizabeth Scott also. I know it wouldn't be necessarily related to the specific stuff you guys are talking about, and then Dave Somers as well. Dave's come in the past and just kind of given us a county update. So while that falls legislatively, they're certainly totally want to hear. Your guys' idea was awesome, and so if there's a way for them to come to the full council, that'd be sweet. But I know you guys had that was a great idea for having that come. So. Anyway, that was the gist of what we had seen before the other meeting. Yeah, it was awesome to see the fields be very active as well. Really exciting. Springtime in Monroe is always exciting. Looking forward to hopefully lots of good
there's
weather.
There's that other game going on too. Right?
There's that other game. You know, I didn't bring it up. My son's not playing. There's a coach. There's former coaches right here. Also, I just want to make one comment as well. I appreciate how this council has operated, this group and the group in the past, giving voters a choice as to whether or not they choose to raise taxes. I know other towns don't do that, and we do that here. I give them the opportunity to say whether or not they want that. So I appreciate that everyone's on board with those kind of things, and I'm glad that we're once again giving them an opportunity to say yes or no to something. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Gehring. Before we move on to department, we do have two committees that are inviting representatives. The reason why I'd made the recommendation is that we consider inviting them here is just simply because they may not be able to make two meetings, and there could be, as was shared tonight, two committees that would like to hear from the representatives. So would it be council's pleasure to, rather than have them come to individual committees, just invite them to the body of council? Or would you like to invite them to a committee meeting? Councilmember Cuddeback.
Where we ended up was let them make the choice. I mean, say, here, we'd love you to come to council, full meeting. Here are our committees, your choice. And to list a few of the dates was what we discussed, and kind of leave it up to them. But I think it's great for them to come to the full council. If they can't make that, it'd be great for them to come to a committee meeting. But we thought to give them the option of choosing.
Okay. And the draft letter that I saw was to Representative Christensen. Representative Scott was also brought up, as well as Councilmember Summers. And I'd imagine that Senator Pearson would be in that as well. So is your committee just inviting Christensen, or are you inviting the other representatives also?
And Senator Pearson, because his interests lie in public safety. And so those were particular to our committee.
Right.
And that's why we discussed those two.
Yeah, that's where I was seeing there being something that's distinguished differently, that if your focus were just your subject area, I could understand inviting them to that to have a work session talking about the subject area, as opposed to coming and giving a more broad update, which is why I was asking the question. So, okay. So what I'm hearing from council then right now is no change from the current proposal, where I have a committee that's going to invite representatives to go to a committee meeting or to come to the body of council, according to the representatives in the broadest sense, schedule. And is your committee then going to invite?
No, that would be okay. For the full, just get regular updates from our legislators here for the full body. So
okay.
Yeah. So, but there was a specific transportation angle
focus.
But there are others as well. They have things going on. We always want to be, you know, in contact. Then we used to do a breakfast, but it's quite frankly, it's a little easier just to have them come and give us an update. So
okay.
We've Councilmember Summers has come in the past, a local, and certainly have an opportunity to hear from. Representative Scott's been very busy with the OSO stuff as well. It's also in the district, so all those kinds of things are applicable here as well. So love to get those on the schedule. But that was for more of a. That was for everybody. That wasn't specific to the committee.
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll ask staff, unless council has objection to it, to send an invitation to our state senator, our two representatives, our county council member, and while we're at it, why don't we go ahead and invite our Congresswoman Del Bene as well. We'll see if she's available as well. And just invite each of them individually to see if they're available to come in and talk about legislative update at some point over the next few months, and then we will put them in on the extended agenda. And does that sound good? Okay. Councilmember Cuddeback, I had already done your light, or?
Well, one of the reasons why, if they're available to come also, like for example, transportation, is to really delve in deep instead of a broad overview to talk about possible funding sources for capital projects specific issues, and to give them a couple of those topics and ask them to come and kind of do more of a deep dive on those issues.
That makes sense.
So, I mean, if they can do both, that would be ideal. If they can't, obviously it's their choice what they
can. Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay, we're going to move on to department reports. We're going to start off with Mr. Feilberg tonight.
You have this multi-colored brochure in front of you. There is on April 26th, there is a 2014 Earth Day event, which is co-sponsored by both the City of Middle and the City of Duval. This year it's being held in the City of Duval. Hopefully next year it's going to be held in the City of Monroe. But you have the opportunity to win a free rain barrel. So we're drawing for that. It's big and blue. and it is legal now because the
but the Department of Ecology has that interpretation that says that rooftop rain harvesting is legal and you don't need to apply to water rights to have a rain barrel anymore. So that is an available opportunity for you on the 26th. Another one is the transportation plan, portion of the 2015 health plan. We're supposed to have the existing conditions report on May 1st from the consultant, and we'll also be doing a level of service and funding workshop with them in the middle of May to talk about funding of capital projects and how that relates to how much money we have and how much improvements we can do and what kind of level of service we'll be looking at. And then they'll be doing over the summer the future modeling of what transportation will look like in the future once we get the land use alternatives from the consultant and they decide where they're going to stick all those extra people that are supposed to be coming in the next 20 years. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. And since you brought up the comp plan update, just a friendly reminder that May 1st will be the park plan, the park component for the comp plan update. So we're channeling Mike.
Yeah.
Chief.
No.
Okay. Gene. Mr. Braswell.
Thank you. The RSVPs are coming in. In regards to the manufacturers pipeline meeting that we're having on the 24th, and Councilmember Cutterback, I believe, is one of the council members that we have had RSVP at this point. So if anybody else is interested, I don't think we've heard from anybody else at this point.
We've heard from Councilmember Camp and Cutterback.
Perfect.
And then as of Friday, I think we had heard from six other entities. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like we heard from Mr. McClelland here tonight as well. Okay. So anyway, if council members are interested in attending, we need to know by this Thursday. And the reason for that is to make certain that there's enough food for lunch that's being catered by the Everett Community College Foundation. Okay. Anything else to say? All right.
Let's go ahead and go into the extended the draft agenda.
Draft agenda, April 22nd, 2014. Under announcements and presentations, we have Housing Hope. Fred will be in here to give a outline of what's happening in Monroe, and we sure appreciate them being part of the community. We have the consent agenda. Under new business, we have award consultant contract for utility systems plan. Under final action, we have approved resolution number XXX 2014, hearing examiner's recommendation for Chain Lake Estates preliminary plat. And we have the draft agenda for May 6th. Additions or deletions?
Okay, seeing none, let's go on to the extended agenda. Looking at the extended agenda, does anybody have any additions or subtractions? Please note again, I'm going to be redundant, that April 22nd, next week, we will have the TBDB meeting. Same thing with May 6th. Please note that there is not a meeting on April 29th. That is the fifth Tuesday. Please note also that staff and I have discussed canceling the meeting of May 27th. May 27th is the Tuesday after Memorial Day. If there is no objection, we will cancel that meeting for the 27th, effective now on the agenda. Yes, Chief.
Get that in the motion.
Let's take that in a motion. Councilmember Gehring, maybe you have that.
I do. I move to cancel the Monroe City Council meeting for May 27th, 2014.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0, and I believe that was Councilmember Camp that had the second. All right. We're going to go ahead. We have a need for an executive session for potential litigation. This is under RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection little I, subsection little I. The estimated time is 10 minutes, and we do not anticipate any action except for adjournment following the executive session. So there being no objection, we will move into executive session, and we will have the session in this room. Okay.
We're back in session. Do I have a motion for adjournment? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening, everybody.
Thanks for the
CPD thing.
Yeah, if he's still.